WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon by telephone with Somi, S-O-M-I, the wonderful musician, singer. She's in New York City today. We're talking with her, and we're playing some cuts from her most recent album, CD, If the Rains Come First. Somi, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can. How are you?
I'm fine. Appreciate your taking time out of your very busy life to talk with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
On WILL. And this is your third CD, and it's just gotten wonderful reviews. Billboard calls it all elegance and awe, utterly captivating. The Jazz Times says it has earthy gutsiness of Nina Simone blended with the vocal beauty of Diana Reeves. And Vogue magazine, their music critics, calls it superb. Now, you're a relatively young woman, young artist. How do you keep modest after all that praise?
Well, that's a lot of generosity that the media and press have been able to extend me. So I guess I just try to focus on the music and hope I can live up to any of the good wishes and thoughts sent my way.
Let's talk a little bit about what kind of music it is. You have called your music New African Soul. Why have you picked those words to describe it?
Well, I sort of try to talk about my experience as I'm originally from Uganda and Rwanda. My family is East African, but I grew up mostly in Illinois, as you know, and between Illinois and Zambia. And I think I tried to honor, you know, my cultural heritage and also kind of put it in the global context of diaspora and the identity politics of being a young African girl or a young African woman coming of age in the West. And so that's really where the New African sort of title part of it comes from. And then in terms of soul, calling it soul music, I don't necessarily mean that I'm coming from the trajectory of Aretha Franklin, but just, you know, soul music and that it's just honest. I try to be honest in my storytelling and my own sort of journey and what I'm sharing with the audience and with the listeners and those who care to listen to the music. So it's sort of all of those things, you know, trying to articulate both a certain kind of cultural aesthetic and as well as just trying to be honest and have a certain integrity as an artist.
Now this newest CD, If the Rains Come First, are all songs which you wrote, and they are story-based songs. I was fortunate to get to hear you sing some of them live at a three-concert series you had here in Champaign-Urbana back in January, and they do tell stories. They're a narrative often. Why have you chosen that kind of song?
Well, I think that's just sort of how it comes out. I don't think that I choose to write, you know, stories necessarily. I don't think I'm trying to always tell a story, but I mean, I'm a lover of fiction. I'm a lover of just literature in general. And so I think that I have a tendency to be influenced by, you know, just, I'm always in awe of a fantastic storyteller, I suppose. Maybe that's the right way to put it. But it's not that I set out to tell a story unless, for example, I witness something that I feel like, you know, I need to tell that person's story. There's a particular song, for example, on If the Rains Come First on that album called Jewel of His Soul. And we might listen to that a bit later. I'm not sure. But it's a story about a homeless man and his sort of him finding himself in Paris, a Senegalese man who was at one point a scientist and then sort of found himself on the streets. And I ended up knowing his story just from other African people. And just coming from the immigrant experience, I felt like, let me try to tell his story. I was so moved by everything that surely he must have sacrificed and left behind in Senegal and to find himself on the streets in a foreign land just really broke my heart. And so I wanted to tell his story because in a way I felt like I was actually telling my story. Not that I've ever experienced homelessness, thankfully, but I've, you know, just to say that that's actually how you can find yourself in another land and you know, be carrying so much of yourself around, but then only to lose yourself in the end in trying to survive that other place. So I think stories kind of come to me in that way sometimes, just by really seeing what it is and wanting to share it with others. But oftentimes it's just sort of a moment of inspiration, and it ends up being a story.
Before we get to hearing the actual some of the music you've recorded and that has gotten such wonderful reviews, let me ask a little bit more about the sort of the classification, because jazz is all some of the critics have written that you're singing really cutting-edge contemporary jazz. How do you feel about that characterization?
About calling my music contemporary jazz?
Yeah.
Well, I never really set out to be a jazz vocalist, so it was a bit of a surprise for me. I mean, I'm deeply influenced by jazz, and I have a great love for the great voices of jazz music. But I also think that the reason I have a tendency to be characterized as jazz is probably because of, I think it's always very difficult to sort of categorize your music, right? And people need to sort of compartmentalize whether the marketing aspects of music products, or they need to be able to put a tag on it and say it's world music, or it's African music, or it's jazz, or it's soul. And I think when you come to, you know, the cultural stage, whether it be a smaller, like a local or global cultural stage, I think that you have to be able to tell someone what it is that they're investing in, because in essence, that's what we're asking people to do. And so, you know, whether it's just an investment of their time to listen to what it is you have to say and sing. And I think people often call it jazz because there's just so many layers and of influence. And jazz has traditionally, I mean, been a genre that actually demands improvisation, demands an individual sound and voice. And I think that's why that genre and that audience has sort of made room for me, because not only because I do play with jazz musicians, but I think that when you choose to express yourself in a way that is free and improvised and very much your own, not to say that other genres don't have artists who are able to do those things, but I think jazz really celebrates that and really champions that. So I'm thankful that those audience, you know, that sort of crowd has created a space for me. And also I've just grown a great deal from the jazz musicians that I've been fortunate enough to work alongside in New York City and all over the world. And they have challenged me in a way to, you know, understand my voice really and truly as an instrument and not just as a singer. And I think that when I'm being placed in the context of jazz, I find that most of these musicians have just such a global sort of musical vocabulary that they're able to go, you know, to East Africa with me, and they're able to come to, you know, south side of Chicago, for example, with me, or wherever it is that I feel like certain types of music have come from and have sort of spoken to me, or, you know, and they're sort of able to kind of navigate through those different musical tropes and influences with such grace and intelligence that I think that's why I sort of feel very comfortable there. It's very hard to find just a guitar player who can play, you know, guitar lines from Central Africa and then play something that is, you know, straight ahead jazz music as well. So when you do find those players and, you know, you stick with them, and thankfully I've been able to find a number of those people and a small number of those people and call them my band. And by associating myself with those jazz musicians, people call me a jazz vocalist. So
let's let people who haven't had the opportunity to hear you live or on CDs yet or downloads hear a sample. Let's start with from your newest CD, the If the Rains Come First, and I'd like to play if you'll let me the second one on that, Prayer Prayer to the Saint of the Brokenhearted. So that's the second cut on If the Rains Come First. Would you tell us a little bit about that song before we hear it?
Sure. That song is, in terms of the meaning of it, you know, people often ask why that title. I mean, it's really a song about heartbreak and having, you know, known love and lost love and sort of coming to a point in your life where you're sort of throwing your hands up and saying, you know what, I just need to have to not be heartbroken anymore, right? And so it's an offering, you know, to some sort of higher power. I mean, I said this prayer to the saint of the brokenhearted because whomever it is that, you know, that one is praying to, they might come over their bed and ask and help that person to be still, that brokenhearted individual, to just sort of be still and still in the sense of just finding a sense of peace and finding that love that is a lasting love, and whether that's with a partner or with yourself, but just to find that sort of lasting love and calm. You know, I think oftentimes when people talk about matters of the heart, they often, you know, and when they're disappointed in matters of the heart, they can get sort of frustrated and anxious. And so it's just about sort of asking for a calm. It doesn't necessarily feel that calm than the music itself, but it's asking and sort of begging for a calm and prayer to the saint of the brokenhearted.
Let's listen to this. It's written and sung by Somi, S-O-M-I, and you, of course, can go to somimusic.com to find out more about this CD. Prayer to the Saint of the Brokenhearted by Somi.
Hours lost in fire within, I've slipped with my heart and hand wide open. Now then I couldn't remember till now, but it tastes just like yesterday. Come down and sweep over my bed, sweet saint of the brokenhearted. Come down and sweep over my bed, sweet saint of the brokenhearted. So I might be still, I might be, I might be still. So I might be still, I might be, I might be still. Seems fast, fatigue seems faster. Now's the future, couldn't dream of till now, but it tastes just like yesterday. Sabah.
Well, we just heard Prayer to the Saint of the Brokenhearted, written and sung by Somi from her CD, If the Rains Come First. When did that CD come out? Was that 2010?
It was the end of 2009, so just over a year ago. It was in November of 2009.
Uh-huh. And so. Your earlier, you've had two CDs earlier. You had one in 2007 called Red Soul in My Eyes, and in the second part of this show we'll hear a little bit from that because I find it wonderful to listen to as well. Let me give the phone number. So if we have listeners who'd like to ask a question about your music, they can give us a call. If people are in the Champaign-Urbana listening area, where WILL originates, of course, at the University of Illinois, you may punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. That's in the 217 area code. If it's long distance, you may use a toll-free line to get to our technical engineer here in the station, Kyle Kroah. Punch in 1-800-222-9455. So that's also available if you're listening online. So 1-800-222-9455. If it's a long distance call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Somi, tell us about your interesting name.
S-O-M-I. Yes. Well, Somi is short for Kabasomi, which is a name from the western part of Uganda, as I mentioned earlier. Even though I grew up in Champaign, Illinois, my family is originally from Uganda and Rwanda. And so my mother is from the western part of Uganda. And Kabasomi in her language means child of reading or child of a scholar. And I was born the year my father was actually completing his postdoctoral work at the University of Illinois. And hence the name. You know, Africans have a tendency to name it, to do circumstantial naming. And so that's sort of what it was. So Somi is just the diminutive. It's just a shorter name, shorter version of Kabasomi. And I find it to be quite a little bit more musical, perhaps. So I decided to just go by Somi.
And since you grew up in Champaign-Urbana, there are folks here locally who knew you in high school and earlier with your family name Laura Kakoma, K-A-K-O-M-A, right?
Yes, of course.
And your late father, you mentioned, was from Rwanda, and I remember when you sang here, not only the concerts you sang at Krannert, which were all sold out, but you very generously sang at the Carl Hospital's Mills Cancer Center Pavilion for patients there and doctors and nurses and other folks in the community who were visiting that day. And you spoke very movingly about some of your music that grew out of feelings you had after your father's very untimely early death. Does your music often grow out of your feelings?
Out of my feelings, definitely, in general. But, you know, my feelings about a number of things. And, you know, I would probably say all the time, you know, music has been sort of a cathartic and it's just something, it's given me something to move through really anything and everything, whether it be moments of pain or joy. I am thankful for the gift of music just to be able to articulate some of those emotions and to be able to talk about things that I don't always maybe have the strength or the words to just, you know, in the normal conversation or in normal sort of personal exchanges to sort of discuss or share. So I'm thankful that I have that as a sort of a medium for both catharsis and celebration.
We're talking with Somi about her music. And another song that I thought we should play, since you referred to the story you wrote about the song about the homeless man, on my On my iPod, when I downloaded it, it's number 10, Jewel of His Soul. But I notice on the station's download, it looks like number 9, Jewel of His Soul. So we're going to start it, and if it's the wrong one, can you tell me?
Okay, I couldn't hear the last bit of music that was played, so I'm not sure if I can tell.
Ah, so you're not able to hear the music. Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I'm not sure what that problem is. So it was just silence when the music was playing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
While our engineer is trying to solve that problem, why don't we play one that I know where it is? Let's let's play a part of the title song from If the Rains Come First.
Okay.
And we think we have this one right. So let's give it a try. Well, we've heard a bit of the title song from the most recent CD of Somi, S-O-M-I, If the Rains Come First. Could you hear that at all, Somi?
I couldn't, actually.
You couldn't again. All right. Well, we'll keep trying to solve that problem, but I'm glad you stayed on the line. Thank you.
Okay.
And we have our first caller for this afternoon who'd like to make a comment or ask a question on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Fine. Could you take the time to talk about some of the difficulties and problems of simply arranging to manage the background, the music, recording, and perhaps the financing of travel time and things of that sort?
Financing them, you said?
Well, that's one of the things. You don't do it without money.
Okay, right.
I think our caller is sort of asking, what's it like to be a professional musician these days? How do you actually get something produced when you're first starting out?
Well, I think there are a lot of different ways. Well, first of all, thank you for your question and thanks for calling. I think there are a lot of different sort of ways. You know, the thing about working as a professional musician or artist is there's no sort of cut and dry A to B, you know, like, oh, I'm going to do this degree and then do this and then, you know, that I'll be able to land a job as a professional, you know, musician or artist and actually have a sustainable career at it. So it is about, you know, keeping the faith. I think that's the name of the show, correct?
Right.
It is also, you know, about always being willing to sort of put yourself in situations that might challenge you in ways that will help you hopefully grow as an artist. I've been fortunate enough to collaborate with a number of different people. I think it's great. It's important to keep open to collaboration because, I've learned so much from just the musicians in my band or some of the other artists who sort of welcomed me into their creative process. I think that's a huge part of it. At least in New York City, it's very much about establishing a sense of community and really immersing yourself in that artistic community, both the artist side and the presenter's side. I think that you have to be malleable in that you should be able to not only do one thing, but do multiple things. And I don't mean multiple things like, and, you know, hold down a waitress job, which I did do many years ago. But like, you know, I also would like to believe that I'm a cultural activist of sorts. I started a nonprofit organization called New Africa Live and supporting other artists with the resources that I've been fortunate enough to be given here in New York. Really, from the beginning, it's about, you know, being clear about what your message is, what your voice is, what you want to share. I think once you're honest with yourself, people feel that. That's the first thing for any kind of sort of creative person. I always believe that it's about just being honest with yourself and not being consumed with what is the next person doing? What is the next artist, you know, the person sitting beside me doing? I think when I first came to New York, I was incredibly overwhelmed with the immense talent that is in this, just in this city. I mean, and that's just in New York, not everywhere else in the world. I was a little bit intimidated by that. But once I was able to kind of remind myself that I actually had been given something, I'd been given the gift of music and the gift of a voice, and once I decided to really honor that and be honest with it to myself, I felt like that's when you ultimately begin to connect with and find your audience who ultimately are loyal to you. And in terms of really getting that music out there, it is about establishing a base, an audience base. And, you know, my main audience is, my main supporters, I should say the longest supporters, the longest community of supporters for me as a professional musician are here in New York City because I started here. But now, you know, obviously I've traveled and toured internationally and have been able to find those audiences in a number of other places. But, you know, it's about establishing that and then being, you know, I think it's important to also be a business mind. You know, you have to know how to sort of market yourself. I think that's what is required of an artist today. You have to know how to market yourself in terms of what is your brand. It's so much about branding ourselves now, because even as we try to reject the idea that we're some sort of commodity or some sort of, you know, thing to be exchanged in the commercial market, I think it's important that we remember that art is business and business and music industry, that's just what it is to survive as an artist, to make a living as an artist. And so in terms of how to finance it, how to get access to that, you know, my journey has been a bit organic in that way. I never sort of shopped, you know, demos around in an aggressive sort of way. I think New York really is a city that celebrates the arts, and it's very much, it's not just about the artists, but it's also about the audiences. They want to be a part of that. They want to be a part of that journey. They want to know, you know, who is doing what. And it's important that as New Yorkers that we're informed about those sort of topics. And so you find I'm able to have that sort of organic journey in terms of labels perhaps presenting themselves when the time was right for them to present themselves. And so fortunately, I've had situations where a label has been able to finance and produce an entire album for me, or I've saved every little dime and produced my second record. My first and second record I produced totally on my own, but my second record I was able to secure an international licensing and distribution opportunity with a pretty reputable label. And so that those sort of situations present themselves, I believe, when you're doing the work and being honest with yourself and really, you know, being honest with your audience and nurturing that. I hope that answered the question.
Thank you very much. I'm sure it did. And thank the caller for that very good question. We're talking with Somi, S-O-M-I, and she mentioned her second album getting wide distribution. That was through World Village and Harmonia Mundi. And her most recent CD, that second one was Red Soil in My Eyes. And her most recent CD, If the Rains Come First, is distributed,
Oblique Sound.
Oblique,
that's
right.
Independent jazz label out of New York and Paris.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And you mentioned collaborations. Who have you collaborated with?
I've collaborated with my most recent, probably in terms of the last record, the one that most people talk about in the press, at least, is with Hugh Masekela. Not sure if you're familiar with him,
Trumpeter,
but he's very,
sure.
Sort of legendary African musician and icon in the definitely in the African jazz and is just a long time somebody I admired for many years as a young person. And I was fortunate enough to meet him in 2005 at a concert that he did here in New York City at Prospect Park. And I did hand him a CD of songs, and he promised to listen. And a few months later, he gave me sent me an email, which was, amazing for me at the time. But he's just somebody who I think, because he grew up in the spirit of mentoring, he is... he's been that person to me over the last 5 years now. And so he performed on my last record. I've also performed with or collaborated with a lot of different people, like anywhere from Baba Mal, a Senegalese great voice of Senegal, Bobby McFerrin, Cassandra Wilson, John Legend, just a very wide range. I don't know, Nicholas Payton, Mos Def, just a very wide range.
And Paul Simon?
Paul Simon, yes, of course, Paul Simon. So just a really wide range of opportunities have sort of presented themselves, and you only hope that you can be prepared for those opportunities when they do present themselves.
And if there are other musicians of a world-class nature, you may email Somi Still at somi@somimusic.com. Somi, we're about halfway through our program, and let me reintroduce you. Somi is a singer and a songwriter. She calls her music New African Soul or Jazz, World Music. Her most recent CD, If the Rains Come First, before that, Red Soil in My Eyes, before that, Eternal Motive. All are available, various places where you can buy music, and I presume at your own website as well?
I beg your pardon? Yes.
At your own website?
Well, at least links to Amazon and
sure.
Other places.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
iTunes.
And so, my name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Let me make a couple announcements about upcoming guests. Next week, we're continuing this little mini-series on the value of music with John Ellis, the tenor saxophone player, also from New York and New Orleans, although he also plays around the world, as does Somi. It's his music that starts and ends Keeping the Faith each week and has for the last 12 years. From his very first CD, I selected a cut from called Grace that I thought was very graceful and a good way to start and end this program. So, but for the first time, we're going to be interviewing him and playing some cuts from his most recent CD called Puppet Mischief. His band is called Double Wide, and it's a very interesting assortment of jazz musicians. Jason Marcellus plays drums. Brian Coogan plays the organ, And in a good New Orleans tradition, he has a sousaphone player, Matt Perrine. And I think that's how his name is pronounced. And as well, he'll bring in a harp player, a harmonica player, and a trombone on that album. His earlier album was Dance Like There's No Tomorrow, also with Double Wide. Before that, he has had other CDs. The one I took grace from is called The Language of Love. But that will be next week, and we'll be talking with him live from a jazz festival in New Orleans. That's May 8th. Incidentally, if you've heard only part of this program because of your schedule, you can hear the entirety at your convenience online at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. Leave the G out of keeping. We're very informal here. And you can hear this program. It'll be archived there in a week or perhaps two, often earlier. And you can hear this interview with Somi at your convenience. Coming up on May 15 on Keeping the Faith, our guest will be an English teacher, Ellen Dahlke, and two of her students, Ellis Woodland and Shaniqua Durgan. They're going to be talking about the very active and interesting Social Justice Committee at Urbana High School. Fear of Peace will be our topic for May 22nd, and we'll be discussing with Mark Johnson, the Executive Director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, the oldest interfaith peace organizations in the U.S., about to celebrate its centenary. We'll be talking with him about the fear of peace, May 22nd. On May 29, I'll be traveling, but Don Nolan will be a guest host and be interviewing Professor John Esposito, who recently gave a very noted lecture here at the University of Illinois on the future of Islam and Muslim-West relations. He's the author of the recent book, Islamophobia and the Challenge of Pluralism in the 21st Century. So religion professor John Esposito will be Don Nolan's guest May 29. One last announcement before we get back to our conversation with Somi. The University Y, which has supported this program for many years, is having its annual collection for Dump and Run, where it collects things from students, but also from others in the community that are still valuable. Maybe furniture, maybe CDs, maybe books, maybe clothes, all kinds of things. They collect and save them over the summer and then have a huge sale so that entering new students, particularly international students who come here in the fall, can buy things very cheaply to furnish their apartments, their dorm rooms, or perhaps to find the appropriate winter clothing that they didn't have in their country of origin. The collections will happen this May again, May 9 through 14, and May 16 through 20. You may take things to the University YMCA at 1001 South Wright Street. That's the corner of Wright and Chalmers. You can just pull up into the back parking lot, unload what you have to donate. Anytime from 9 to 4, Monday through Friday, maybe even Saturday, no, Monday through Friday. Thursdays are open a little later till 7 p.m. for working folks. So, again, collections for Dump and Run, May 9 through 14 and 16 through 20. If you have questions, you may call the Y 337-1500 in area code 217. There are a few things they won't take. They won't take large appliances. They won't take mattresses. They won't take non-working computer gear and so forth. But they take almost everything. So don't throw it away. Recycle. Well, let's get back to our guest today, Somi, S-O-M-I. And why don't we start off by playing a little bit from your Red Soil in My Eyes 2007 CD. I've been listening to this for some time and really enjoy it personally. Let's start with the first cut. How do you pronounce this? Is it Ingeli?
Ingeli.
And what language is that in?
It's in Swahili.
That's Swahili.
Mm-hmm.
And you grew up, you mentioned your father was from Rwanda, your mother from Uganda, you spent time in Zambia. African languages. In some of your songs, I think I hear Xhosa. I can't do that clicking sound, but but you've learned to do that, or did you learn that early?
I don't speak Xhosa, but the clicking that people hear when they ask me, what that is and if I'm speaking an African language, it's actually vocal percussion.
Ah, okay.
And it's just something that I began to explore, as with my voice and slowly incorporate it into my music.
Well, let's hear from Somi Ingali. Just heard a portion of the Swahili language on Ingali, sung by Somi from her CD from 2007, Red Soil in My Eyes. Somi, were you able to hear that at all?
I was. Thank you.
Ah, good. We've solved that problem. Wonderful. And let's talk a little bit about your vocal range. You just demonstrated in that, one reason I wanted to play it was these very low mezzo soprano or maybe even tenor baritone sounds as well as a high soprano. Was your voice naturally that way? Have you had to work at that?
I think, yes, I've worked at it would be the short answer. But I think that it's definitely now after studying and voice for some time and, it's a muscle, really. So then you end up being able to reach certain parts of your voice that I probably wouldn't have had I not trained at all. But yeah, it is my natural range, and it is my natural range. But I did study at some point.
Tell us about your vocal training, your vocal education.
Well, I kind of came to music at a later point in my life. I mean, came to it seriously. Being in New York City, I meet artists all the time who, have since they were a child just been pursuing a career. And I didn't really go about it in that way. Music was always a part of my life. I studied the cello from the time I was 8 and throughout, all the way into university. I was still studying and playing in the orchestra when I was in college, but I didn't really take my voice very seriously until after college, until after university, and when I kind of said, wait a minute, maybe I should, maybe this is an option. Because, you grow up in, not that my family was so conservative, but coming from sort of a very straight and narrow sort of African background. and again, not that they're conservative at all, but just to say that they have, you know, certain types of careers. Most of my family are academics or work in medicine or work in sort of these typical professions, and I didn't have anybody who was in the arts, so I didn't know that I could pursue singing as a viable career. And when I did sing a lot as a child, I was in choirs and things like that, but I didn't really, I guess the backstory is, and I'm sorry if I'm not getting right to the question, because I think it's, I'm trying to contextualize how I sort of came to understanding my voice.
Sure.
Around 8 years old, we moved from Zambia to Illinois. And when I was in Zambia, I was very much a performer between the age of 3 and 8. And I was always, you know, doing solos and singing and school plays and, you know, just really hungry for the stage. And when I moved to Illinois, sadly, you know, most people didn't really understand where I was from. At the time, I had a very strong British accent from the primary school I'd attended in Zambia. And people weren't sort of, didn't make me feel so comfortable. And as a young child at 8 years old, you're sort of like, you know, you don't, you need the confidence to get up and speak, you know, and share with people. And when people would sort of say very ignorant comments about Africa and where I was from, I just tried to sort of shy away. I was always still an extroverted person, but I had not in a public setting. For some reason, I was completely silenced when it came to public speaking. Well, for several reasons, but I just sort of shied away from that. And I believe that that's actually why I began to pursue the cello, because I think in some way I still knew that I wanted music in my life. And so when music, you know, when strings were brought into the Champaign Unit 4 schools and they said, hey, would anybody like to play one of these instruments? I was like, this is fantastic. And I actually believe that the cello was my voice for so long. And I only sang in ensembles from that point forth. And it wasn't until, and singing was just a fantasy of mine. I don't know if anybody, at least in the Illinois or Champaign-Urbana listeners, might know of an opera singer named Amy Elizabeth Treat, who's also here in New York City. And she and I grew up together and would explore music and singing, you know, regularly. And it, I think it's just a beautiful thing that we would both sort of find ourselves now in New York and now sharing our voice, and not, and only because I believe that she's somebody who knew me as a singer at a very young point. It's, and it was a very private thing. That's why I'm bringing up the story of Amy. And so it wasn't until after college, after I went and spent a year and a half in East Africa and was able to sort of lay to rest a lot of the romantic baggage of who am I as an African woman, and I was so preoccupied with that, and I just being able to come to terms with my bicultural identity, being able to say, okay, now I've seen where I'm from, and now I actually, it sounds cliche, but now I know kind of where I would like to go. And I realized that was towards the music. And I came back to the States and moved to New York and began to take private lessons. And I had my first performance in New York 2 years after I moved here. So it sort of took me a while to feel confident about sharing anything at all, and also to feel like I was prepared in a way. So I've studied with people who have a very holistic approach to voice, who are very much about centering yourself and kind of coming from a yogic kind of understanding of your body as an instrument of vibrations. And so I've gone into that, and I've also studied classically as well, because that was sort of an easier transition from studying the cello and going to a classical voice instructor. And so understanding from different perspectives, but ultimately trying to make sure that it's your own voice. And that's sort of the journey of you know, from sound to silence to really acknowledging and fully embracing my voice as a performer and an artist.
Thanks for sharing that that personal history. Now, your years in Zambia as a very young child, and then the year and a half you spent later in East Africa, but you were actually born in the U.S., so you could become president. Is that true?
Yes.
And do you have the long-form birth certificate? Or could you get it?
I I hope so.
We're talking with Somi about her music, and she has been described as, in the Boston Globe, as having an almost impossibly perfect cosmopolitanism. And in her background and in her music, we just heard a song that she sang in Swahili, and I'd like Somi just to play another cut from that album, Red Soil in My Eyes, from 2007, called African Lady. That tell us about the anti-domestic violence movement, and that this is sort of an anthem for.
Sure. Well, I wrote that song, you know, Lady is really, it's referencing the great Fela Kuti, the Nigerian pioneer of Afrobeat music, his song Lady, which was sort of talking about who African women are and can be, and it's burdened with stereotypes. His song is like, you know, just sort of all of the negative things about, I believe it's about a misunderstanding of the African woman. It's a great song. I mean, Fela Kuti was a genius, but the message can be perceived as, you know, a bit condescending or a bit disrespectful of whom I believe African women to be. And the African women in my life have always been incredibly strong and big-hearted human beings, my mother in particular. I think that song initially was just about reinterpreting that particular piece, but I decided to let it be a reclamation of power, you know, and let it, if I was going to try to rearrange that, that let me write lyrics that sort of reclaim that. And I thought about a conversation I had with an auntie of mine, an aunt of mine in Uganda several years ago. And there was a woman that we knew who was going through a whole dispute with her husband, and just issues of women's rights came up in a conversation. And she told me that in Uganda at the time, and I'm not saying this is the case now, but at the time, it was considered legal to beat your wife, to abuse your wife in every possible way, because technically in the legal system, women were property of their husband. And they were, the men were able to do what they wanted and how they wanted, whatever they wanted and however they would like to treat their wives was acceptable. And so I was so disturbed at the fact that a woman had no recourse, no legal recourse, no protection of her physical self and, you know, in through the country and the law. And so I wrote this song really thinking about, you know, speaking out against domestic violence. It happens in Africa, but everywhere in the world. I like to tell people that it's not to say that it happens in such a, you know, on such a gross level in Africa in a way that doesn't happen right here in the States. I mean,
I'm going to have to cut in so we can hear at least a minute or two of this
before
we come to the end of our hour. Just a second.
Sure.
Here's African Lady by Somi from Red Soil in My Eyes.
She gon' say, she gon' say I be lady, oh. She gon' say, she gon' say I be lady, oh. Zigga 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 zigga, zigga 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 zigga. I gon' say,
We've heard just the first minute or so from African Lady, but we got a little bit of the text written by Somi and performed by Somi, S-O-M-I. We only have about 90 seconds left. We can talk, Somi, but tell us about your mother.
My mother. Oh, my mother is an angel. My mother is my best friend, and I'm thankful for her.
You said
she's listening.
You described her as strong and big-hearted.
Yes.
She's been a nurse in a cancer unit, right?
Yes. She is now retired. She was an oncology nurse, and she was before that, she was a midwife and worked in obstetrics, but then she transitioned to cancer. She's a wonderful human being. And I'm not saying that because she's my mother. I'm saying that because I know it's true.
And tell us her name.
Her name is Elizabeth Kakoma.
K-A-K-O-M-A. And
yes.
Laura Kakoma, growing up in Champaign-Urbana, went to Centennial High School. Where'd you go to college?
I went to Central, actually. I went to Uni.
Oh, you went
Central
to Central. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it wrong. Sorry. You went to Central High School, and then where to college?
I did my undergraduate at the University of Illinois in Champaign, and I did my graduate work at New York University, Tisch School of the Arts.
We appreciate very much your taking time to be on the phone with us today, and I'm sorry we had a few technical difficulties, but your voice sounded great live as well as on the CDs where we were able to share with our
Thanks
listeners.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs here on WILL. You have been listening to Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 HD3 Urbana. And many listeners are also online at will.illinois.edu. You can go to that website to hear this program if you missed part of it, as well as other programs for the past 5 or 6, 7 years. So, feel free to go to will.illinois.edu/AM, look for Keeping the Faith, and you'll find our programs archived there. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with John Ellis, another musician in this little mini-series on the value of music. And just as we've heard about the spirituality that's so important and social justice issues to Somi, we'll be talking to John Ellis about a more difficult, perhaps, music to talk about in those terms, but one that I have found very spiritually satisfying. So his band is Double Wide. We'll be playing cuts from his latest CD, Puppet Mischief. Following that, May 15, Ellen Dahlke and the Social Justice Committee of Urbana High School. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
Last year, the state of Arizona enacted a law requiring law enforcement officials to ask anyone they thought might be in the U.S. illegally to show their immigration papers. The law has proven highly controversial, although a majority of Americans say they support it. Next time on Focus, our morning talk show, we'll look at immigration reform and the social consequences for people who are excluded. Our guest will be sociologist Cecilia Menihar from Arizona State University. I'm David Inge. It's Focus, weekday mornings at 10 on WILL AM.
This is Illinois Public.